Good morning, and welcome to the final day of Ledbury Poetry Festival 2023. I hope you've had a wonderful festival. Thank you very much for coming to this event celebrating poetry and translation. Whether you're here in Birgit Hall with us or joining us on the live stream from around the world, you're very welcome. My name is Erica Hesketh, and I'm the director of the Poetry Translation Centre. And I'm your host for today, for this double bill of poets writing in Arabic. And thank you very much to the festival's principal founder, Arts Council England. A couple of words about the Poetry Translation Centre. We are an arts organisation based in London, set up by the English poet Sarah Maguire in 2004. Our mission is to celebrate and champion contemporary poets and poetries from around the world in English translation. And we believe passionately that poetry is enriched through translation. The possibilities of what poetry can be and what it can do are enlarged by translation. And also that because poetry is such an important and often mainstream art form for many of the diaspora communities that have made their home in the UK over years and decades and centuries, poetry, the sharing of it, offers an opportunity to connect between communities and also between generations. So everything that we do is about the craft of translation, the possibility of translation, and also the power of poetry to be a meeting place for people. So we make events, we make workshops, and we publish dual language books. And we are really, really proud and excited to share with you our two latest books. A Friend's Kitchen by Al-Sadiq al-Radi, in translation from the Arabic by Bria Bajalan with the poet Shuk. And I Will Not Fold These Maps by Mona Karim, translated from the Arabic by Sarah Al-Kamel. So we've got an hour and a bit together this morning, and we want to make sure you hear as many poems as possible. So what we're going to do is I will briefly introduce each book, and the poets and their translators will read for half an hour each, and then we will go straight to audience Q&A. These five people are incredibly eloquent about their craft, about poetry, and about the process of translation. So please ask them anything. And also, they'll be signing books at the end, so there'll be a chance for informal conversation after the event as well. So, Mona Karim is one of the leading lights of poetry from the Middle East and the Gulf. She has three collections of poetry in Arabic, and her poems in English translation have been published in loads of magazines across the US and the UK. She lives in the US at the moment and is an assistant professor of Middle East Studies at Washington University, St. Louis. Mona was born in the 1980s in Kuwait into the Bedouin community. The Bedouin stateless community is an Arab minority community who, when Kuwait gained independence in 1961, were denied citizenship. And that's a situation that continues to this day. And Mona, as well as being a writer, spends a lot of her energy drawing attention to the situation for her community internationally. Mona discovered her gift for poetry very early on and published her first collection at the age of just 14. And her third collection came out soon after she was granted asylum in the USA. She was in the US to pursue a graduate fellowship in comparative literature in 2011, but the Kuwaiti authorities wouldn't renew her travel documents, essentially, so she was forced to be in exile from the country of her birth and from her family, who was still living in Kuwait. And this sort of moment of rupturing demarcates her sort of actual life and creative life to a sort of before and after exile. And the reason I'm telling you this is because the book, I Will Not Fold These Maps, contains poems from all three of her published collections, so the sort of before and the after, as well as some as yet unpublished new work. And you can see running through Mona's poetry this idea of precariousness, of estrangement from place, the absence of place. In her poems, the bodily becomes the abstract and vice versa. And there is an exploration of what is chartable, mappable, and what isn't. The translations were made by Sarah L. Camel, who, as well as a translator, obviously is a poet in English. She has a chapbook out with Akashic Books from 2021. She is based in Cairo. And Sarah and Mona met as poets on a program in the US, MFA program, and made a connection and decided to collaborate together on bringing these translations into the world. And we're so excited that they did that. And this is the outcome so far. There are more poems, more translations that will be making their way into the world in the future. Of this book, the poet Mumtaz Ameri said, "Mona Karim's poems wriggle against the constraints of borders and reductive cartographies. Hers is a ruthlessly generous poetry, one which burrows under the skin of various gulfs, exposing the subterranean and subjugated, the echoes of dying cities and resurrected histories. In these poems, exile is a purgatory, an interrupted horizon. The migrant and the poet share a body. Boundaries are obliterated and overthrown. Karim inhabits the state of suspension, inviting us to do the same in our reading." Please join me in welcoming Mona Karim and Sarah L. Camel.
Thank you, Erica. And thank you, Ledbury, for having me. It's been fun. I will start, so basically I will read in Arabic and Sarah will read in English. Okay. Jinat. لا يمكنك الوثوق بشخص لا يحب البرتقال. كان لي مرة صديقة تكره البرتقال، تعصر عينيها جزعا من رائحته، تقول أنها تفضل العطور أو حتى رائحة رز محترق. شفاهها المكتنزة لا تحمل أي مشاعر تجاه العصائر بمرارتها وحلاوتها أو دبقها، حتى أن أسنانها لم تألف عملية تعرية البرتقالة أو تعرية أي جلد في العموم. أنا أيضا كان لي ثمرة كرهتها في تلك الأيام السحيقة، عندما كنا نجلس على أرض الله، النساء في وضعية بوذا والرجال متقرفصين، نحاصر رأس معزة تقف فوق جبل من الرز كشمعة ميلاد، اجتمعوا في دائرة كحشد فاتته أفعال المقصلة، لكنه قد يشهد لفظة الروح. كنت أحبذ الرأس، ذلك الملك المغدور محشوا بالشموخ، بأصابعي الطويلة أجره نحو حدودي بينما أفرز البصلات الصغيرة بعيدا عنه. ولدت في بلد يأكل فيها الناس بأعينهم، وبإمكانهم حتى استقدام عمالة تأكل بالنيابة عنهم فيحافظ على أسنانهم لارتكاب خطايا أكبر. يتشاكى بعضهم كيف تكون الطماطم حمراء هكذا وبلا سكر. ثم في يوم قرر أبي شراء طاولة طعام، لم يعد لأصابعنا أماكن تغوص فيها وتحفر، ولا دروب تلاحق عبرها حلقات البصل. مستوين على الكراسي جلس الرجال والنساء، بينما ظلت صحيفة اليوم جائعة على الكنبة. اليوم أقضم البصل كما لو أنها تفاحة أو جزرا كانت تعصره أمي، أملا بإنقاذ عيني في مهمة مثلت الامتحان الأول لأمومتها. سألت أمي الطبيب، هل صحيح أن الجزر يساعد؟ فهز رأسه إيجابا، لأن في ذهنه الفلاح ذكره سؤالها بنكتة عن كون الأطفال حميرا والأمهات ساحرات. كل يوم راحت تعصر الجزرة حتى بات كل شيء بطعم الجزر، وتفتحت عيناي إلى رؤى وكوابيس وقصص عن أم قلبت ابنتها حمارا. من وقتها لم تحاول أمي إنقاذي ثانية. لا شيء ينفع تقول، لم تعد تؤمن بالخضروات والفواكه ولا الأمومة والتطبيب. لا يمكن علاج الأفواه والعيون تقول، لا يمكن هزيمة الجينات.
Hi everyone. This is genetics. You can't trust someone who doesn't like oranges. I once had a friend who hated oranges. She'd squeeze her eyes shut, repulsed by the scent. She said she preferred perfume or even the smell of burnt rice. Her plump lips held no emotion towards the bitterness, sweetness, or stickiness of juice. Her teeth were strangers to the stripping of an orange and the stripping of skin in general. I too had a fruit I hated in those abysmal days, when we would sit on God's soil, the women in Buddha pose, the men squatting around the head of a goat that stood on a mountain of rice like a birthday candle. We gathered in a circle like a crowd that had arrived too late to the guillotining, but just in time to witness the final utterance of the soul. I loved the head, the betrayed king stuffed with pride. My long fingers dragged him towards my edges, flinging small onions to the side. I was born to a country where people eat with their eyes. They can even hire workers to eat on their behalf, to save their own teeth for greater sins. Some of them complain, how can tomatoes be so red and so sugarless? Then one day, my father decided to buy a dining table. Suddenly, there was nowhere for our fingers to dive and dig, no pathways lined with onion rings. Men and women sat equal on chairs as today's newspaper lingered hungry on the sofa. Today, I bite into onions like apples or the carrots my mother would juice, desperate to save my eyesight, on the mission that shaped the first test of her motherhood. Is it true carrots can help? My mother asked the doctor, who nodded with a grin, for in his peasant brain, her question recalled a hilarious fable where children are donkeys and mothers witches. Every day she squeezed carrots until everything tasted like carrots, and my eyes opened to visions, nightmares, and stories of a woman who turned her daughter into a donkey. That was the last time my mother tried to save me. There's no point, she said. She no longer believed in fruits and vegetables or motherhood or medicine. You cannot cure mouths or eyes, she said. You cannot compete with genetics. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, this was supposed to be a funny poem, but no one laughed. I don't know how to take this. And yesterday I attended the Ledbury Slam and I laughed so much. And I was like, I guess English people are funny. there's this long poem here, which is numbered. I'm not going to read the numbers, you know. I'd like to call it a necklace of a poem, and each line is, you know, each number is really just one line, maybe three or four words long, a few lines long, and we never get to read it because it's long. So we're like, let's be bold, you know, this is the time to get experimental. And you know, I think we're in a church, right? Or was a church, yeah. So imagine I'm reading in Latin, right? it's an exercise to, you know, like at least a sound exercise, even if you don't understand Arabic. You can hum, you can, you know, make any sounds really, so just so I can know I'm not alone here. Okay. نزيف الكونية. المطر اندماج مشترك. الليل يقف خجولا في قلبي نهر يغرق هل ينتحب مثلي تلتقطني بحياء وطالعها روحها في يدي وكلماتها تهطل في ثقب من الأبدية لا تمنحه غير الأمهات يغسل روحه بالمطهر أملا في الهرب من الفلسفة الخطيئة تختبئ تحت قميصي التقط ما تبقى من دموع جدتي فهي المفتاح الوحيد لنحيبنا البكاء يخرج من بيتي آه كم أنا مشتاقة للغطس فيه أتصفح روحي لا شيء غير اللعنة ملابسي تملأ فضاء المدنس وخصوصيتي تداعب السماء معلقون في الطهارة نحاول اجتذاب أطراف الابتسامة الناي عين الأرض الحقيقة تتعرى علها تقتل الأشجار أعلق بكائي على الباب ريثما ألتقيه في المطهر أيقونة الغربة قميص ووجه في الحزن يتصفح الأحذية ليلا الوطن يستحم بدماء الفقراء أصنع طيرا يتذكر أحضان جدتي أمي تختبئ في علبة كبريت أبي يشعلها قصيدة أخرى تقع من ذاكرتي البنات يعانقن الحقيقة كم هن غبيات في حبهن لهذا الحيوان الذاكرة تتألم حينما تسمع امرأة ترقص بلا رحمة ندخل المراهقة شيطان وعامل يدهسنا باشتراكيته النعاس له أصابع طويلة في الليل الحياة تعلن نحيبها لحظة فشل أحاسيسي الطيور تضطهد أفكاري مطرقة ومسمار ومعدات أخرى لتعليق الضوء قرب النافذة الأرض تتحجب بالمطر الشتاء يطوي الحقيقة كلما انجر الظل نيتشه وسيم جدا رغم شروخه الفلسفية الظلام يقف وحيدا في هذه المدرسة التعاسة تحن لمعانقة الناي ضوء يرتحل من هذا الأفق المغاير جروح تحك لوحة سلفادور دالي هجاء يراقص جسد فريدا كالو أحمق من يحملق في وجه المرأة من مصلحته أن يستبدلها بإله أفضل العصفور نهر ينام قرب البدون الخطيئة لا تنام إلا قرب النساء قمر يدعوني لحفر قبر من الموت صوتك يثير الرقص في رئتي الوطن يلد ظلما مستأجرا لحن من التحيات يراني تمثالا مؤلما التصوف يلطخ سمعة الفساد نساء سرياليات يحلقن في رأسي ترى هل سير سمنة نميمة مفتوحة خراف تتعرى من القتل والعدم يشبهها ببنت الجيران الحياة تعيش غيبوبة من الحروب البياض في يدي النزيف للكونية
Cosmic hemorrhage. Rain is an affair of fusion. Night lingers timidly in my heart. A river drowns in itself. Does it weep like I do? She picks me up timidly. I pour over her. Her soul is in my hands. Her words pour down inside me. A cavity of eternity that only mothers can give. He disinfects his soul, hoping to escape philosophy. Sin conceals itself below my shirt. I catch what's left of my grandmother's tears, the only keys to our grief. Weeping vacates my house. Oh, how I miss diving in it. I flip through the pages of my soul. I find nothing but damnation. My outfit permeates an irreverent cosmos, and my privacy teases the sky. Suspended in purity, we try to draw the edges of a smile. The flute is the eye of the earth. The truth strips naked. Perhaps it could murder the trees. I hang my tears on the door until we meet in purgatory. the stamp of estrangement, a shirt and a face cloaked in gloom, browsing shoes in the night. The nation bathes in the blood of the poor. I build a bird who recalls my grandmother's embrace. My mother hides in a matchbox. My father ignites her. Yet another poem plummets from my memory. Girls embrace the truth. How foolish of them to love this animal. Memory aches at the sound of a woman dancing without mercy. We enter adolescence, a demon and a worker trampling us with socialism. Lethargy grows long fingers in the night. Life begins to wail the moment my senses fail me. Birds persecute my thoughts. A hammer, a nail, and other tools to hang light near the window. The earth veils itself with rain. Winter enfolds the truth whenever shadows wander. Nietzsche is quite handsome, despite his philosophical fractures. Darkness lingers lonely in this school. Despair longs to embrace the flute. Light departs this contrarian horizon. Wounds nick Salvador Dali's painting. Ridicule circles Frida Kahlo's body. Only a fool stares into the face of a woman. It would be in his best interest to replace her with a more favorable god. The bird is a river that sleeps near the Bedouin. Sin only sleeps near women. The moon implores me to dig a grave of death. Your voice sets off a dance in my lungs. The nation gives birth to a least injustice. A melody of greetings finds me a throbbing statue. Sufism tarnishes the name of corruption. Surreal women flutter around my head. I wonder if they'll paint open-ended gossip. Sheep are murdered and stripped. Their nothingness mirrors the neighbor's daughter. Life resides in a coma of wars. Whiteness is in my hands, a hemorrhage for the cosmos. Thank you.
So I will read one last poem, a prose poem. It's about the impossible return. After like 10, 11 years of living in the States, I attempted to visit Kuwait. And before I attempted to, I was very anxious about whether I would be able to get in or not, which I didn't end up getting in, but I wrote this poem where I imagined what would happen. So it's called Return. جلست عودة جلست في الكرسي المقابل له قبل أن يأذن لي بذلك. اخترته في حال شل الخوف ركبتي. أستند بظهري إلى الحائط. في اللحظات التي أغلق فيها الباب ووثب نحو مكتبه في خطوتين راجعت سريعا النقاط الرئيسية لحياتي والتي كنت قد لخصتها وراجعتها بصوت عال في الأيام الأخيرة قبل الرحلة. انزعجت أني لم أحرص على تعلم قراءة الخطوط والنجوم التي قد تدلني على رتبته. هل أسأله وهل أبدأ سؤالي بكلمة حضرتك التي لم يسبق لي استخدامها لكنها كثيرا ما تظهر في الأفلام وأحيانا تفيد البطل أو تتسبب في اضطهاده أكثر. ما الذي جاء بك إلى هنا؟ قال وتنهد. جئت إلى هنا لأني من هنا، قلت. كيف تكونين من هنا وأنت لست هنا؟ قال. أنا من هنا ورحلت من هنا قبل 10 سنوات، قلت. هذا مستحيل لم يسبق لأحد من هنا أن خرج على الأقل ليس على حد علمنا قال أقسم لحضرتك أني خرجت من هنا بل على من على عدة أمتار من مكتبك هذا في اليوم 16 من أغسطس كان ذلك في عهد الرئيس السابق قلت أولا المطار منذ الأزل لا نفتحه خلال شهور الصيف لأن البلاد تكون جهنما وثانيا ليس لدينا رئيس حتى يسبقه آخر قال أرجوك لا حاجة لهذه الألاعيب أنت تعرف عن أي رئيس أتكلم الذي جعل نصف السكان داخل السور والنصف الآخر خارجه قلت قضيت حياتي كلها هنا ولم أرى سورا قال بل الذي بناه الأسلاف ودخل منه حصان طروادة قلت ووجدت سبابتي ترسم خطا في الهواء يمتد على الساحل ثم يصعد ثانية ليرسم دائرة مكتملة غريبة الشكل ومتعرجة إن كانت وجهتك طروادة فأنت في المكان الخطأ قال لم أقصد طروادة حرفيا قصدتها كلازمة شعرية لا أكثر قلت شوفي إن أردت الدخول لا مانع من ذلك أردت أن أشرح لك أن المطار هذا يسمح للدخول فقط قال وأين أجد مطار الخروج قلت ما زلنا نفكر في الموضوع قال موضوع المطار قلت لم نقرر بعد كيف نسمح للناس بالخروج ولأي سبب قال ولكن لي حياة هناك أنا هنا فقط لأتفقد حياتي التي تركتها هنا قلت هكذا تسوي الأمور إما تعبرين السور مرة أخيرة أو تعودين إلى طروادة قال Thank you.
The return. I sat in the chair opposite him before he said I could. Fear had paralyzed my knees. My back could only lean against the wall. As he pulled the door closed and leapt towards his desk, I quickly went over the key milestones in my life, which I had charted and rehearsed aloud in the days leading up to this trip. It suddenly annoyed me that I made no effort to study stars or insignia patches. Maybe then I could have guessed his rank. Do I ask him? Do I preface my question with the word sir, which I have never before used, but which often materializes in the movies, at times to the benefit of the protagonist, at times to his detriment? What are you doing here? He asked with a sigh. I came here because I am from here, I said. How could you be from here when you do not live here? He asked. I am from here. I left 10 years ago, I said. That is impossible. No one has ever left this place, at least not as far as we know, he said. I swear to you, sir, that I departed from here on August 16th, 2011. In fact, it was just a few meters away from this office. It was during the former president's era, I said. Firstly, we have never operated this airport in the summer, when the country becomes an inferno. And secondly, we do not have a president, so how could another possibly precede him? He said, please, there is no need for these games. You know very well which president I am referring to, the same one who locked half the population behind the wall and left the second half stranded on the outside. I said, I have spent my entire life here, he said, and I have never seen a wall. Well, it exists. The ancestors built it. It is the same wall that let the Trojan horse in, I said, as my forefinger sketched a line in the air, stretching along the coast before rising again to draw a full circle, only oddly shaped and jagged. If your destination is Troy, then you aren't the wrong place, he said. I didn't mean Troy literally. I meant it as a poetic epithet, I told him. Look, if you would like to enter, there is no objection, but I simply wish to explain to you that this airport only allows entry, he said. And where do I find the exit airport? I asked. We are still thinking about it, he said. The airport issue? I asked. We have yet to decide how to let people out and for what reason, he said. But I have another life there, I am just here to look in on the life I left behind, I said. I apologize. These are the rules, he told me. It is either you cross the wall one last time or else go back to Troy. Thank you.
Thank you so much for reading those, especially that new poem we haven't heard before, so thank you. So, Al-Sadiq al-Radi. Al-Sadiq al-Radi is regarded as one of Africa's leading poets writing in the Arabic language. He has published 3 collections in Arabic and had a collected poems out in 2009 in Egypt. He was born in Khartoum in Sudan and lived there for many years. He was, for some years, the cultural editor of the Al-Sudani newspaper and was a journalist as well as a poet. He has lived in exile in the UK since 2012, which is also the last time he was here at Ledbury Poetry Festival. This is his 3rd time at the festival. He came in 2005 with the Poetry Translation Centre's first World Poets Tour, and then again in 2012, and here today. Sadiq is one of the very first poets translated by the Poetry Translation Centre, and his friendship with our founder, Sarah Maguire, was a very deep and close one, and she was a great supporter of his work in translation. So, and in 2016, the Poetry Translation Centre co-published with Blood Axe Books a selection of Sadiq's work called A Monkey at the Window, which we've got at the back as well. And I really recommend it as an overview of Sadiq's poetic work before he was here in the UK. The translations were done by a variety of different translators, but his voice is crystal clear and amazing to read. But this book, A Friend's Kitchen, is poems made after he arrived here. And it includes poems that have not been published in book form in either language. So in 2012, when Sadiq was here at Ledbury, he was in the UK because he was invited to take part in Poetry Parnassus, which was, if you might remember, a big international gathering of poets to coincide with the 2012 Olympics. And there was a poet from every Olympic country, and Sadiq was representing Sudan. And while he was here, there was an uprising against the Omar al-Bashir regime and a brutal crackdown, and many of Sadiq's journalist colleagues were arrested and imprisoned, and he found himself unable to return to Sudan. And suddenly cut off from his wife and children, it turned out, for 5 years. And eventually he sought asylum in the UK, and he and his family live in London. And he makes his way as a poet here now. The poems in this book are, they started life, previous versions of them, as poems that he shared as posts on Facebook to sort of keep in touch somehow with people back at home and to offer solidarity as well. There's poems in here that reflect on the situation in Sudan, and especially a set from 2019 when there were further uprisings. And there's also poems about exile in Sadiq's unique way that deal with the physical reality, the relentless detail of asylum, but also the spiritual incomprehensibility of exile. The poems are impressionistic, many-layered, and really moving to anyone who has not been through this experience, and also to people who have, I think. The translations were made by Briar Bajalan, working collaboratively with the poet Shuk. Briar is, as well as a translator from Arabic, he's a scholar and a poet in English. Some of you might have heard him speak some poems yesterday at the Passagiata. And a filmmaker, and he's was born in Iraq and is now based in Exeter, where he is researching erotic poetry from Mosul.
Yeah.
And Shook is an American poet whose creative output includes poems in English and in Spanish, translations and co-translations from many different languages, often working directly with the poet to do a sort of poet-to-poet translation. And Shook is also the founder and editor at Phoneme, which is an international facing poetry press, now an imprint of Deep Vellum in the US. And Shook and Sadiq go back a long way. They became friends, I think, through the Poetry Translation Center. And some time ago had this idea to try and bring to publication the Facebook poems, as we were calling them then. And Shook and Briar met in Iraq when they were both living there, and Shook introduced Briar to Sadiq, and this collaboration was born. And it's been a long road to get here, at least 5 years of working on these poems. Collaboration is painstaking and beautiful and very meaningful. And we're so delighted to be able to share this sort of unique publication. I'm going to read a quote from... I should say as well that when we decided to publish it in 2023, we didn't know, of course, that the situation in Sudan unfolding right now would add a whole new resonance to the poems, even though they were written a few years ago. So Bill Herbert says of this collection, "Al-Sadiq al-Radi's new book manages to be several things at once. It's certainly a political protestation, an act of resistance of the spirit to oppression in Sudan and to the pressures the UK places on political exiles. But it is at the same time an ecstatic, disorienting celebration of language and the imagination, and a raw, grieving set of eulogies to the loss of love, friendship, and imaginative freedom. We owe his translators a great debt in that they managed successfully to convey what anyone who has heard him read knows is the dizzying rhetorical power and force of his Arabic." So please join me in welcoming Al-Sadiq al-Radi, Briar Bajlan, and Shook.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for coming. We first read the English poems because of Sadiq's preference, so we read the English poems first, so that kind of helps you to travel with Sadiq into the way that he reads the poems in Arabic. Asylum Papers. 1. I spent 25 years in exile's bar, all in cash, examining time's scroll on a rusty table. The saxophone screeched at me from eternity's throat, from an old regret I have challenged to erase, for screeching my wasted day. What is exile? 2. In the past, a house of mud, the smell of tobacco permitting the morning to rise, a cup of tea, the neighbors' chatter and the newspaper, rising hope on the path of determination, forgetting yesterday's massacre, simmering our separation or anticipating a new day. Bureaucracy ruined your day. Your capital is time in the landfill. 3. A fifth drink or 5 in the morning. My companion in the hotel room devours time. You don't grasp for the cup, but bow your head in respect. Nor do you grasp for a kiss with an empty cup. Between me and the cigarette, something that comes to mind. Between the cigarette and the bed cover, something that wouldn't occur to you. But the morning emerges between the sign and its name, or between the pillows and their cotton. The sun goes down, but yesterday has yet to set. 4. Exile is a void. I remember its ecstasy when I make my home, or when the only thing to make its home is the taste of remembrance. I remember the names of those who departed, one by one. I was one of them. I remember the names of those who were buried. I remember your name, or the names of those yet to be born. This was exile with its countless nights. 5. You need roots to establish yourself in the soil. Esoteric knowledge of petrology and the taxonomy of plants. Reptilian species and the nature of the seasons, the phyla of birds, etc. You need so much to be someone else.
أوراق اللجوء 25 عاما أنفقتها نقدا في حانة المنفى أدرس جمجمة الوقت على طاولة صدئة هتف لي عنصر الساكسفون من حنجرة الأبدية من ندم أسبق هتفت بي خسارة اليوم ما المنفى السابق بيت الطين رائحة التبغ تأذن للصباح أن يطل كوب الشاي لغو الجيران والصحيفة نصب الأمل على سارية العزم نسيان مجزرة الأمس طهو المسافات أو توقع يوم جديد النظام أتلف يومك رأس مالك وقت على مقلب النفايات الكأس الخامسة أو الخامسة صباحا في غرفة الفندق ثمة من تشرب الوقت لا تعبر الكأس حاسرة الرأس أو تعبر القبلة فارغة الكأس بيني وبين السجارة ثمة ما يخطر على البال بينها وغطاء السرير ما لا يخطر على البال بيد أن الصباح يطل بيد أن الصباح يطل بين الإشارة واسمها أو بين الوسائد والقطن تمرق الشمس ولا يغرب الأمس المنفى جوافة أتذكر نشوتها حين أسكن أو حين لا يسكن إلا مذاق التذكر أذكر أسماء من غادروا واحدا واحدة كنت واحدهم أذكر أسماء من قبروا أذكر اسمك أو اسم من يولد كان منفى ولياليك بلا حساب تحتاج إلى جذر لتسكن التربة معرفة باطنية بأمم الحجر وفصائل النبات بخصائص الفصول وأنواع الزواحف بشعوب الطير تحتاج الكثير لتكون غيرك
Thank you for having us. 121. 1. Between the first cup of hot chocolate I ever ordered and the heat of the phone against my cheek on the other end every night, one number. Dialing it does not justify a hot bath or this sweat drowning the night with its healthy joy. nor does it uncover the magic of the flirtatious apple. 2. The phone number that no one answers, the bus that won't arrive for another 27 minutes, the strange girl sobbing beside you. At 5 o'clock on a Sunday morning, you dare not even comfort her. The bottle of vodka smashed on the pavement. Everything, everything invokes your exile. Everything shouts, "Hey, lonely!" 3. To write to or about you, I must follow the stream bed. I must listen carefully for breathless footfall so I can trace your steps without reaching your borders or the topmost stair. Where I find every season, all at once, for the first time, they pulse on the wings of dark angels. There is a nameless, peerless planet yet to be born. There is a God born now from the magic of the created. No one is worthy of my companionship. Some forebears strip off their vestments. Only the spotless may accompany the spotless. While night's wheel pursues a wheelless night, broken winged, I call on a compassionate spring. Your nights, engraved on the dervish's mosque, call to me. His ritual pitcher gleams with no need for the splendor of a throne.
مية واحد وعشرين بين كأس الهوت شوكليت الذي طلبته أول مرة وسخونة الهاتف على الخد في الطرف الآخر كل ليلة رقم واحد تأويله لا يفسر حماما ساخنا أو عرقا أغرق ليلتها بالفرح المعافى كشف سر التفاحة اللعوب رقم الهاتف الذي لا يرد البص الذي لن يصل قبل 27 دقيقة الصبية الغريبة التي تجهش بالبكاء قربك في 5 من صباح الأحد ولا تجرؤ على أن تطيب خاطرها قنينة الفودكا المهشمة على الرصيف كل شيء كل شيء يناديك بالغربة كل شيء يهتف بك يا وحيد لأكتب لك أو عنك ينبغي أن أتبع مجرى الجدول الصغير لابد أن أحسن الإصغاء لخطوي يلهث إثر خطوك دون أن أبلغ مسافة حرفك أو أول درجات السلم الفصول كانت هناك دفعة واحدة لأول مرة تنبض بأجنحة الملائكة الآبقين ثمة كوكب اسمه لم يولد بعد ثمة إله يتخلق توا من سحر المخلوق لا يصلح لمنادمة أحد غير منقوص ينادم غير منقوص ثلة تخلع حلة بينما تركض عربة ليل إثر ليل بلا عربة أتنادى مهيض جناحي لنبع يحن على مسجد الدرويش تتنادى لياليك منغوشة إبريقه يبرق بلا حاجة لكمال العروش
Friend's kitchen. The wall of language was no barrier in a friend's kitchen. In a friend's kitchen, night lit up the buddy's stove, teacup and wine jug. Her toddling love uniquely hers, a strange place, a strange name, and laughter provoked by the strangeness of the sounds and the candle on the bathtub's edge, its beckoning tongue and my beloved's scent. Such a holy symbol hidden in the nape of her neck, such a neck, such an armpit, such a navel, and my soul's submission, no translation needed. The wall of language and that night's worthless words, and then the sensor of arrival and the prayers.
مطبخ الصديقة جدار اللغة لم يك فاصلا في مطبخ الصديقة في مطبخ الصديقة موقد الجسم أشعله الليل كأس الشاي وإبريق النبيز التعاطف الفذ مع طفولة العاطفة المكان الغريب الاسم الغريب الضحكة المستثارة من غربة الصوت والشمعة على حافة البانيو تستعطف ألسنة الوجد والرائحة ثمة أيقونة نادرة النحت قرب العنق ثمة العنق ثمة الإبط والسرة ثمة ما تحتنق الروح بلا ترجمان جدار اللغة والكلمات العاطلة ليلتها ثم مجمرة الوصل والأدعية.
What is your name? Every second of my worship, I am learning the alphabet of you. I'm learning you from love itself. Your mouth is a mosque for my lustful tongue. Your love welcomes me with countless flags. Your name does not name or describe you. You are you. No letters can contain you. Your gait is a gallop. You outrun the whirlwind. Your soul outruns the essence of a soul. I am learning your name and your being. I am learning you until we meet again.
ما اسمك؟ أتعلم أبجد كونك كل ثانية أتقيك فيها. أتعلمك على الهوى مباشرة. فمك مسجد الفم المشتهى فمك مسجد الفم المشتهى ولحنوك رايات لا حصر لها ليس اسمك اسم ولا وصف لك أنت أنت ولا حرف يصلح رمحك فرسا تعجز زوبعة الريح روحك تعجز جوهرة الروح أتعلم اسمك ووسمك أتعلم حتى ألاقيك
Female. A pristine cup of coffee begs for your brain. Flirting, ripening across the fire. It ripens your soul with its scent. It lusts for you entirely naked. It lusts for you entirely naked. Before it's brewed, it becomes yours. This night is for you, lady of my night and noon, lady of coffee and sorrow. Your queenly night of Meccan celebration, by the story of the dove, the surah of the spider. 12 at night, your mouth plays with stone and fire. Mine savors the fifth element. I rouse by heating wind and water. 2 in the morning, a tongue emerges to sip from the mouth of the abyss.
أنثى كأس البن عذراء تطلب رأسك مغناجة تتلوى على النار تنضج روحك في الرائحة تتشهاك كاملة العري قبل أن تنضج تصبح كأسك هذه الليلة لك سيدة الليل والظهيرة سيدة البن والشجن الطقسي ليلتك الملكية حفية بأنسك المكي بسيرة الحمامة بصورة العنكبوت 12 ليلا فمك يلعب بالحجر والنار التذ بالعنصر الخامس في طبخة الريح والماء 12 صباحا لسان شارع يشرب من فم الهاوية
Nearly forgot you. The war ended on Wednesday. On Monday, the sky was clear. Earth is no longer a game to those who dye it red with the blood of Adam's sons. I remember her footsteps outside my door, 50 years before Basil, and my longing gushes up. Do you remember some trace of our embrace? There was a tree. There was a well. There was a rope dangling from the secret's edge. The seed was pregnant. The tunic, its dervish was naked beneath the tunic of longing.
كدت أنساك الحرب انتهت يوم الأربعاء يوم الاثنين كانت السماء صافية الأرض لم تعد لعبة في يد من يصبغونها بدم ابن آدم تذكرت وقع أقدامها قرب بابي قبل 50 قرنا من الرياحين تذكرت وقع أقدامها قرب بابي قبل 50 قرنا من الرياحين والشوق دافق هل تذكرت طيف العناق كانت الشجرة كانت البئر كان حبل مدلى على حافة السر كانت البذرة حبلى والحلة درويشها عاريا في لباس الحنين
Thank you so much. We've got time for questions. If anyone would like to ask about anything to do with the poems, the process of writing, the process of translating. Oh, there's a roving mic as well, which will come to you, so the people at home can hear the question.
Thank you very much for the poems and the translations. I noticed that the first of Mona's poems and all of Sadiq's poems were in high classical Arabic. I wonder if Mona would like to comment, because I thought the later poems were more colloquial. Am I right?
Thank you. Yeah, I would say maybe the later poems... This works, all right? Okay. I would say that the later poems are... I'm trying to write in classical, but... or let's say colloquial, and bring in the colloquial into the classical. So as you can see, especially in the last poem, Return, it's a dialogue back and forth, and therefore I didn't want it to be just rigid, and I wanted to create another register of the language. So you can see that, for example, when I say, or when I write that the policeman says, Shufi, right? So perhaps a more classical one would be you know, to switch the two between the two registers of the narrative and the dialogue, it helps to add this layer that comes from Kilikawil. And this is something you can see more pronounced in Arabic fiction, where there is the switching, but usually in Arabic poetry, the separation is more rigid, and I'm hoping to pass, you know, trespass, let's say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
For all of your wonderful poetry that you've read today, I wondered if any of it is available on YouTube with you reading.
Personally, yes. You'll find many.
And so that both Muna and Sadiq have been on tour with their translators for the last week and a bit, and a lot of the events have been recorded. So there's been events at the Shabak Festival in London, as well as at Exeter, and there will be at Liverpool and Poetry International. So and most, you know, since the pandemic, I guess events are often recorded, aren't they? So there should be quite a lot available online. And the poets have also all recorded audio of all of the poems for the PTC's podcast. So over the next few months, we'll be releasing the recordings of the poems in both languages on our website.
Can I ask, as a translator, I'm interested in the translations of Sadiq's poems, whether the two of you collaborated, or whether you each had individual poems which you took care of, and if so, how you arrived at those choices. I'm just interested in the process, because collaborative translation, I think, is a very difficult thing, especially if you have your own poetic voice, and there's the poetic voice of the person you're translating.
Sure. Well, as Erica mentioned, this was a long process. I first talked to Briar over Skype, actually, when I was in LA, and he was in Slimani in late 2017. And then when I moved to Slimani in 2018, we began working together in person and made quite a bit of progress on the manuscript, although, to be frank, there were several points at which it seemed hopeless. And then when Briar moved to Exeter to pursue his graduate work, we began working over Zoom again. And it was a pretty collaborative process. Briar would often make a sort of skeleton, and then we would work line by line, phrase by phrase. We had Sadiq record many of these so that we could hear them. And you know, we were fortunate to count with a close relationship with Sadiq. We could go to him and say, listen, we're really having trouble with this. We understand that it means this or is achieving this effect in the original. Are we right about that? And is it okay if we take these liberties to attempt to do something similar? And he was very supportive. You know, often when Briar would bring him questions,
he would respond that he had no idea, you know, that he just wrote it, you know, read it.
Sometimes he would tell me, who wrote this poem?
Yeah, do you have anything to add about our process, Briar? I think it helps that we're very close friends and can be very honest with each other. And
it was just fun, you know, having fun and laugh together and enjoying our friendship first, and then also like exploring the lines in these poems, like with the writer, going to all the streets the poems taken us. So it's just like quite a really fun process. But also one of the like challenges was like, because like Sadiq's poems are like steeped into Quranic language, and it has a lot of imagery from Sufism and Sufi traditions that's often very concealed in complex imagery. Like I come from a Sufi family, my whole family are Sufis, but also Sadiq's poems are specifically rooted in the Sudanese like Sufi manifestation that I was lacking. So it was kind of also like a process of learning.
And I do think, I'll just add that I think the collaborative nature of this translation led to a better product. I know there's a tradition of established poets, often white men, quote, collaborating with a native speaker of a language who is basically a dictionary on legs to them. And then they take, you know, most, if not all, of the credit. And this, I think, in some sense, was more like a workshop than anything else.
Two questions online, one from Alison Blank, which says, were there any words in Arabic that did not translate to English? And if so, how did the translators address this, aside from, obviously, Frida Kahlo and Hot Chocolate? Yeah, I suspect the translators of Sadiq's work.
No, I mean, the words you mentioned are in my poems.
Oh, sorry, yeah, well, it, to all of you then, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, Sarah, did you encounter any words that...
Untranslatable? Yeah. We don't like that term, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think for me, the challenge wasn't with specific words that I couldn't translate, but maybe sometimes it was challenging to parse the syntax, because syntax can be very different in Arabic versus English, and then translating the meaning also means translating the syntax or rewriting the syntax in a way. So I think I can't think of specific words, but I can definitely think of moments where I was looking at a sentence and trying to figure out the beginning and the end, and then how to, whether to retain the syntax of the Arabic in the English or to turn it around, but then that would maybe compromise the flow or what would come after the sentence. But then in general, I think I feel a lot of freedom, like Briar and Shuk were describing with their process with Sadiq. With Mona, I don't feel like I have to come back to her with a translation that's 100% accurate, whatever accurate means in this context. But I think that if I encounter difficulties and I decide to change something around, in the interest of clarifying meaning, or in the interest of sound, in the interest of like any of the things that, as a poet translator, I'm looking for in a draft, then I feel confident that Mona would be open to entertaining my suggestions and having a conversation around it.
Thank you. One more question. This is to Mona and Sadiq. Do you, since your work being translated, do you now subsequently write sometimes with the idea that it's going to be translated? And if so, how does that potentially affect what you're writing, how you're writing?
I would say that no, I don't have this in mind at all. Maybe in my case also is that I sometimes write in English, and even though I'm not like, I don't necessarily write with the aim of like publishing a book in English, but because I live in the States for so long and it's become my second language. I like to say often that I write in English as an experiment or as a way of relating to my everyday life. So, you know, if that was on mind, I would just write in English, you know. But when I write in Arabic, it's, in fact, the Arabic reader is really who is in my mind. Because, for example, I noticed that it's a big challenge to write about living in the United States to an Arabic audience. I always ask myself, why would they relate, you know? And then sometimes I take this challenge in a different way and think, how could they relate, right? So like, you know, this, maybe that's not the best example of the poem I read, Return, because it's between two worlds, but even the fact that I made it, you know, I used that metaphor of the Trojan horse, you know, the exiled as a Trojan horse, you know? That was a way of for me to let's say subvert and distill, you know, this experience. So it can mean a return in many ways. It can mean a crossing in different ways, right? So yeah, sometimes I take on that challenge of like writing. Sargun Bolus, an Iraqi poet, calls it the madness of writing about America in Arabic, you know. You know, and it often you feel like you're just hearing your own echo, you know. But sometimes I don't necessarily, you know, sometimes my poems don't happen in America, you know. Sometimes they happen in no place. This no place is like a fictional place for me. Once again, no, I do not think about translation as always a prospect. And I'm sure there are poems that are just, you know, not there to be translated, which is just nice to have, really.
بالتأكيد بالتأكيد ال يعني أنا بكون سعيد جدا إنه القصيدة بتاعتي لما تترجم للغة تانية إنها تحظى بفرصة بتاعت حياة في لغة تانية وإن أخذت شكل مختلف بالطبع من شكلها باللغة العربية.
Of course, I'm happy that my poems are translated into another language and also gains the chance to have a new life that also they might live a different life, but this is like the birth of like a new life for a poem.
من خلال العمل يعني طبعا انا ما مترجم لكن من خلال العمل مع المترجمين في ورش العمل يعني يمكن خلال اكثر من 10 سنوات عملت مع أكثر من 6 أو 7 مترجمين هم شعراء مختلفين وعندهم طرق مختلفة في التفكير في الشعر.
Through my work with translators for more than 10 years now and participating in workshops, of course, like these poets, these translators, every one of them have their different voice. Everyone they have different style in translation.
بالتأكيد هذه التجربة بتاعت العمل مع المترجمين الآخرين كان عندها تأثير في التفكير في إنه أنا ربما بديت أفكر في الشعر بطرق جديدة وطرق مختلفة قبل ما أترجم أو قبل ما أشتغل مع المترجمين.
Of course, like working with different translators also gave me the access of knowing different possibilities and different ways of writing.
عملي مع المترجمين المختلفين في ورش بتاعت عمل مختلفة ساعدني كثير في إنه أتخلص من بعض التقاليد الخاصة به في كتابة الشعر. الشاعر دائما عنده تقاليد خاصة في كتابة الشعر ربما تشكل مع مرور الوقت قيود. الشاعر بيحتاج أحيانا يفكر إنه يغير ويطلع من عاداته الخاصة في كتابة الشعر.
And working with different translators and in different workshops, of course, helped me to get rid of a lot of conventional traditions, like personal conventional tradition in writing. And of course, like I view some of these personal conventional traditions as restricting poetry. So it was helpful in a way that it, that I could get rid of some of these.
So just as translation can bring in new ideas of how poetry can work, having your own work translated can sort of maybe do that as well. We often talk about translators being the closest possible readers of a poem because they just spend time at the sort of atomic level of a poem, you know. And that you can't help but sort of see the work in new ways. I wonder, is there another question? Otherwise we could maybe finish with a poem each? What do you think? Okay, one question.
Thank you so much. Would it be possible to talk a bit more about the poetry tradition in the Farsadiq and Mona, in the Sufi Sudanese tradition, and then also in the Badun community? So, yeah, would it be possible to know about the place of poetry within your communities?
Yeah, thank you. I would say, to be honest, it's really a privilege to be an Arabic poet because we are talking about a massive literary tradition, you know, especially in poetry. We have this phrase where we say poetry is the book of Arabs. When we talk about Arabic-speaking countries, we talk about 22 countries. Arabic is not only spoken by Arabs, it's spoken by all the you know, indigenous minorities who live in the region, you know, so, and we collectively over centuries continue to revive this language and experiment in it and become in conversation with others. So it's on the level of language and on the level of poetics as well. So I, again, feel privileged that, you know, I belong to this massive tradition, you know, this rich tradition. That I, you know, I can publish a book that would be read in Morocco or Oman just the same, you know, especially that I'm not a colloquial poet. You know, I write in standardized Arabic. You know, Arabic poetry is more, at least in the standardized, is more organized along periods and schools, right, of and literary movements. And even though, you know, in the post-colonial times, it's become also national literature has been introduced, enforced, really, because it was part of the nation-building project, you know, and suddenly you have, you know, Emirati literature, Libyan literature, Egyptian literature, and so on. But I think, once again, you know, a few decades later, we realize that these are you know, arbitrary templates, really, you know, because if you ask me about my favorite writers in different genres, I will give you names from, you know, from different places. But to answer your question in the specific, considering that I am a stateless of Kuwait, we have both. I mean, on one side, there is a great tradition of oral poetry because we are a tribal people. And a lot of our own history is registered in poetry, you know, and passed on in poetry, and memorized also, right? So there is that in terms of the everyday life. And it's not only oral poetry. Oral poetry has so many, like, forms of, like, in what form do you write this poem? Do you write this epic? Do you write, you know? And sometimes it is in the religious context. Sometimes it's just tribal and sociological in a way. But then in the more contemporary times, let's say especially starting like The earliest stateless poet in Kuwait is Sleiman Fleyer, and he's from the 70s generation. And then from him onwards, it's more standardized Arabic, and it's very modern, it's experimental, and also it's many of us tend to write poetry than novel because of many reasons. One of them, I think, is of course poetry being closer to our people culturally, but also poetry gives us more space to maneuver censorship, maneuver authoritarianism. You know, it's like coded language, right, in a way. And, you know, still, you could write a symbolic poem and still, you know, face prosecution, but, and it does say something that only in the past decade that we see a turn into to fiction, you know, toward fiction. So, I don't know, maybe this is a very scholarly answer, but I hope it's helpful.
الشعر مهم جدا بالنسبة للشعب السوداني وبالنسبة للسودانيين. السودان بلد متعدد الثقافات ومتعدد الإثنيات، ومع كل هذا التنوع الشعر مهم جدا، ويكاد يكون إذا سافرت أي قرية، إذا سافرت أي مدينة، يندر إنه تلقى بيت يخلو من أن يكون فيه شاعر. والشعر في السودان يكتب بعدة لغات ويكتب بعدة مستويات.
Of course, like poetry is loved for, in the Sudanese culture and also by the people of Sudan. And in Sudan, it's very multicultural and multi-ethnicity place. And poetry as well is very diverse, as Sudan is diverse itself, and also like as you go to Sudan, like it's hard to find a house that there isn't a poet inside it.
Yeah, لأنه الشعر بالنسبة للسودانيين من زمن طويل هو مرتبط بالغناء. الغناء أكيد يعني كل الشعوب مرتبطة بالغناء. ولأنه الشعر قريب جدا للغناء وللموسيقى، فيكتب الشعر بكل اللغات المحلية، ويكتب بالعاميات المختلفة، وبالتأكيد في أي لهجة، في أي عامية من العاميات المختلفة داخل اللغة العربية في السودان بيكون في شكل مختلف من الشكل الثاني. لكن نوع الشعر اللي أنا بكتبه، اللي هو الشعر بيكتب وينشر في الصحف والمجلات ويطلع في الدواوين والكتب وكذا، يعني عنده تاريخ عريق أيضا، ومرتبط بالضرورة مع بعض الاختلافات، مرتبط بالضرورة بالتاريخ الكبير لتاريخ الشعر في الوطن العربي عموما. يعني
also the poetry in Sudan has like a very strong link with singing, and also like singing in the vernacular languages, like in the streets and the neighborhoods, and it has a really tight link with music in the country. And also the type of poems that I write that goes to the newspapers and books is different. And also like these poems that are recited in vernacular language, there are like different vernacular languages in Sudan. They are like all very different from each other. They are very like different layers of cultures of poetry.
يقرأ طبعا الشعر اللي بكتبه أنا ومجموعة من الأجيال المختلفة مرتبط ويقرأ من ضمن خريطة الشعر العربي في الوطن العربي الكبير. ودلوقت الشعر العربي أيضا يكتب من مختلف أرجاء العالم، حيث ما كان يقيم من يكتبون باللغة العربية، فهو مرتبط بتاريخ الأدب العربي من كل العصور ويتأثر به. وبالتأكيد يعني من الستينات السبعينات لنا أسماء، يعني في أسماء سودانية مؤثرة موجودة ضمن خريطة الأدب العربي.
It's different voice, but also also very linked to the whole tradition of Arabic poetry. And like, and as we can see, like in the, especially like in the 60s and 70s, we have very influential names of Sudani poets in the general map of Arabic poetry.
Great, thank you. I thought we might have time for a poem, but we don't, because the next event starts here at 12. So we hope you enjoy the rest of the day and the festival, and we'll see you again next year. Thank you.